Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Grant Bentley, calling in all the way from Australia. He's a specialist in the facial analysis method of homeopathy. Today is October 24th, 2011. Whether you're new to homeopathy or continuing your lifelong study, you're going to find this information very innovative and a great addition to your healing toolbox. We're asking people to tweet, email, message on Facebook, share, and let others know about this special opportunity to listen in live and learn with Grant. It's a short show, and he really fills it with a lot of information. So we're going to welcome Grant Bentley, founder of the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, to the show today, as this is our second, let me see, are we on our second show, Grant?
Yes, we're on our second. How are you, Debbie?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And why don't I just ask you, what is the weather like over there?
Well, the weather being in spring is pretty darn changeable. It was about 29 or 30 2 days ago, about 16 yesterday. Now, I'm talking Celsius, of course, which is, I guess, around about 90 one day and about 65 the next. So it's kind of all over the shop at the moment.
I see. And we're going into our autumn season, so we're looking at changes in the weather and cooler air at night. So for some reason, my phone is ringing and nobody's answering it, but the show must go on. I thought it would be really nice if you would just kind of give a summation of the first show. I'm hearing an echo somehow.
It's not coming across at this end as an echo at all.
Okay.
The summation of the first show was just simply an introduction into, I guess, the different changes of philosophy that HFA type of homeopathy has a little bit in conventional homeopathy in its inclusion of the into facial structure, which is the most, of course, and we spoke a little bit about where that facial structure came from through reading books like Allen and Roberts, as well as some of the old texts of just conventional medicine. We were talking about that branch of medicine called syphilology, where they talk about herodosyphilis, or the outcomes of people, the children of people who had syphilis, sometimes the grandchildren and even beyond, that while not syphilitic themselves showed telltale signs through facial structure that syphilis had been in the family. And of course, where I went from then was that if syphilis can do that, then all the other miasms being equal should also be able to do that. Allen and Roberts, as we know, talk about this, and so that began the project. And then I just discussed the mechanisms for the project itself and how that information was gathered. And then some of the things that it's taught me along the way in the clinic. So that's kind of, I guess, a very short summary of last week.
And we did have a very nice response to that. people were listening in, tuning in, and I got some messages from folks saying it was a great show. So today what we're going to talk about are clinical outcomes using the homeopathy facial analysis method. And these are coming from your clinic and what you've been observing over the past decade, I assume.
Yes, that's right. In the end, it all comes, while there are some great philosophical changes, and I guess some of these philosophical changes extend way beyond homeopathy in just how, I guess, life works in a lot of sense. And that I wasn't quite prepared for. You remember, as I said, I just started out here trying to include the miasm into my case prescriptions because Hahnemann said that it was important to do so. So to have my whole philosophy on life altered was not something that was in the bargain, but anyway, that's something that did happen. But that being said, the most important thing, of course, is the fact that the only way that you can tell what is the truth from what is fantasy or just theory that you're making up is that it always works. And how homeopaths, of course, measure the truth is by their clinical success. The clinical success began straight away after implementing the facial diagnostic, this facial analysis that we do, little by little, but enough to let me know each step of the way that I was on the right track. And so clinical outcomes, as you said, are really what it's all about.
And it shortened the time between trying and attempting to find the correct remedy for the individual to see some improvement through the continual use of this process.
One of the first things that I began to learn, Debbie, was how good Hahnemann's Polycrests were. I was, like a lot of people, buying numerous exotic remedies. I have a pharmacy of some, I don't know how many, but thousands of remedies. And you would find them in the Materia Medica, or a lecturer would give you a little bit of insight into a particular remedy and type of person that would need it. And as a result of that, I purchased remedies by the dozen each time there was a lecture, or each time the Materia Medica. Over the years, I have just a warehouse of remedies. Unfortunately, for me now, a warehouse of remedies that I very rarely use. It's very interesting when I read, I think it was Rima Handley's book, where they talk about how Hahnemann, even though Hahnemann had quite a number of remedies, a couple of hundred remedies or whatever it may be, he only really used the same 50 or so continuously. And that's understanding the Polycrest. This is where the Polycrest really come from. It's a bit like what you see in pharmacy with generic brandings. There are a lot of diversions of aspirins or a non-steroid anti-inflammatory drug. There are a lot of different labels and names, but essentially the generic version does the job. And I guess this is what I have relearned. I guess each step of the way that I've gone, I've kind of become, in some ways, more Hahnemannian by stepping away from Hahnemann's teachings, but finding that I'm drawn back to it. And the Polycrests are one of them. I used to think that I knew the Polycrest, for example. I would know Calcarb because Calcarb has got a kind of a wet, limp handshake and is fair, fat and flabby and all of these other things. Someone comes in and they've got blonde hair and they're munching on chalk. Well, I know exactly what it is that I'm going to give them. The truth in the matter is, though, that maybe less than 0.1% of the people who are going to respond and need Calcarb fit that profile. And as I've begun to understand and trust the model that I've developed, I've rediscovered what Hahnemann knew about the Polycrest all along, and that is that they're a drug for many people and of many uses. In the background, a lot of work going on, so I'm going to apologize. I just about 5 minutes before I started the show around my office, there's a whole lot of noise going on, so I'm hoping you don't hear it in the background.
It sounds good to me. I don't hear any disturbing noise. So let me see if I understand that what you're telling me is you refamiliarized yourself with the Polycrest. You kind of were relearning them as you did your approach, and when you described CARB, how many people normally typify the way of appearance, this wet, limp handshake and fair, fat, and flabby blonde munching on chalk, you found a much deeper understanding of CALC-CARB so that you didn't have to see those particular appearance, you could see something else and still recognize it as CALC-CARB. Am I understanding correctly?
Well, yes and no. In some ways, it's a more cleansive view of CALC-CARB or any Polycrest that you want to talk about. But I question whether or not the deeper is the right adjective, because deeper seems to imply that there is some insight that I am gaining into being able to spot a person who needs the remedy. In that is a CALC-CARB person, homeopathic sort of way. And that's not what I mean. What I mean is that I have learned, the clinic has taught me to draw most of the learning that I have about the Polycrest, such as the fair, fat, and flabby, and that whole kind of drug picture that we come to learn as students to understand each Polycrest. What I actually mean is that I no longer see CALC-CARB or any Polycrest as a person. This is what I guess Kent and post-Kentian homeopathy is all about. It's about, as I think was written once, seeing the world as a hospital, and there is Mr. CALC-CARB and there is Miss Pulsatilla, and learning the character and seeing remedies in this anthropomorphic way where they take on the persona and character of people. But Hahnemann, that wasn't Hahnemann's idea at all, and it certainly wasn't, it cannot possibly be the thinking behind what he termed a Polycrest. A Polycrest is a drug of many uses for many people, meaning that a whole range of different people will still need CALC-CARB, all having nothing in common, including the pathology in which they're visiting you for. So they will look different, they will act different, they will behave in a different manner, and they will present different signs and symptoms, and yet at the end they will still all need CALC-CARB as their remedy. And that's what and the effectiveness of using CALC-CARB in that non-grimatory way is what makes it a Polycrest. And that's what I mean when I say that I rediscovered the Polycrest, not so much that I have gained even deeper insight, but in fact I've dropped the insight that potentially limits it from being a remedy or just a remedy. And by dropping that quote-unquote insight, it's gone from status of a remedy into status of a Polycrest once again.
That was great. I think I'm starting to understand it. I'm sure that I'm going to have to actually use it in that way to fully comprehend and get it so that my mind, body, and spirit really understand what you have learned over a period of time. So did you want to talk about the clinical the results that you, what was it that you were going to tell us today, something really specific?
Well, I guess when we're, if we're, while we're on this, I suppose, I'll just move ahead a little further and just explain to you how I unlearned, because unlearning, of course, is so much more difficult than learning. Particularly, as I don't know how long the courses are in America, where the course that I went to here as a student was a four-year course. It was very comprehensive. My teacher was a great teacher, and I just was enthralled with homeopathy from very first moment. I'd come through the psychotherapy, I'd come through the clinical hypnosis into the naturopathy, and then what I ended up doing was that I had then went into the homeopathy from there. But I, just like a lot of people, adopted this and sponged up with enthusiasm this Kalkab personality, this sulfur personality, this stramonium personality, and I tried to see it in the people and the patients that were around me and coming into my clinic. But what happened later on is, as I began to trust the HFA system, now remember, what the HFA system is actually about is that it's only there to determine the underlying miasm that Hahnemann said should be done. Now, I just spend, I know that you... you want me to slow down, Debbie, so you but I'm on a bit of a roll here, so I just want to just push this just a little bit further. What happens is that in chronic diseases, we have Hahnemann saying that the remedy that we choose must match the miasm of the patient. Now, the reason for that is that, let's just take sulfur, for example. And we spoke about this last week, but it's worth doing again. Sulfur, in its action, is centrifugal. All the soric remedies are centrifugal, meaning that it pushes out to the circumference. Whatever is inside the body is pushed out to the surface of the skin, or as far away from vital organs as it possibly can. And in that way, the vital organs are kept as safe as possible. So now what we do, this is the whole reason why Hahnemann was stressing, and he didn't put it into these terms, so I'm paraphrasing here. But essentially why we need to get the right miasm of the remedy is because if that person is soric, meaning that their own defense system is going to try to protect themselves by throwing stress or infection to the surface, then we come along with a well-repertorized remedy that might be mercury, for example, because as we know, if we just go by repertorization only, then sulfur and mercury can be close, as two can be thuya, and so on. But if we give mercury, which is a remedy that whose action is to go inward, to conserve energy, to prolong the fight rather than to expel energy and use energy by expelling a stress or invader out to the surface, then we are doing the exact opposite of what our patient's defense system is trying to do. And as a result of that, we get what we term a quote-unquote homeopathic aggravation. It's not just the doubling up of symptoms. This is something completely different. And we experience it all the time. We read in these old books about how the well-indicated remedy fails to relieve, or it only does a minor bit, or even though it repertorizes well, it creates an incredible disturbance. So the authors or the practitioners are left thinking, well, is it a potency issue? Is it a frequency issue? What is going on here? But what I began understanding is that it was what Hahnemann was trying to always tell us, a miasmatic issue. you can't judge the miasm by the indicated signs and symptoms. You cannot judge the miasm by the pathology. If you have a look at Hahnemann's chronic diseases and the pathology that is under SORA, it encompasses absolutely everything. And so as a result of that pathology, as Bonninghausen once wrote, and so too did Boger later on, is almost unusable. You can't use pathology as an indicator of the miasms, which is what started the whole HFA project. So how do you find this underlying miasm that Hahnemann was so intent that homeopaths understand? Well, with HFA, of course, you can, because each miasm leaves its legacy and forms shape and structure. By understanding that shape and structure, we can now incorporate that before the fact. And so what I learned along the way was that not only was Hahnemann right in this idea that the miasm must match the patient, the HFA model showed me that I could extend. So what I'm talking about here, let's just say we have pulsatilla coming up in our repertorization. We have thuja, we have mercury, and we have sulfur. I automatically know through doing facial analysis or HFA, I automatically know that the mercury and the thuja is not going to be adequate. They are not the right remedies for this patient. They might repertorize well, but they do not suit that underlying miasm. So my only choice now is between sulfur and pulsatilla, because they are the two remaining soric remedies. But what I've found also is that I would give the sulfur because the person was lean and stooped and, well, I don't know, a famed philosopher. I mean, obviously, I'm making this up and it's all cliche, but And just forgive me if I lose a little track, because the noise here is terribly bad, so I'm glad you can't hear it. But so somebody who is tall and stooped over and, you know, argues about the price of the consultation, I will give them sulfur. And then they come back and nothing happens. All right, or what happens is that there is such a minor improvement that I don't consider it worth waiting for, or that it's the right remedy. So what I would then do is that I would trust the miasmatic model. And I understand that pulsatilla was the next most highly repertorized. Even though this person doesn't fit its characteristics, I would give it anyway, trusting the facial analysis, trusting nature over the construct that we have put into it. And that's exactly what happened. This person would then come back and say, you know, those migraines that I'm coming to see you for, I haven't had one now for 2 months, and the arthritis is 50% better than what it used to be, and I'm starting to sleep again. And the same would happen with every miasm. The same would happen as that a person who was tall and dark and effervescent and had this capturing personality, and I would do their facial analysis and they would come up tubercular, and then I would, you know, I'd do the repertorization, and sure enough, there's phosphorus and calc carb is right next to it. So I'd have to choose phosphorus. And I would choose phosphorus. And just over time, that phosphorus person, just like our sulfur person, coming back saying to me, well, that was okay, or no, it didn't do anything at all. And I would look at the next well-repertorized remedy in that miasmatic group that I know the patient belongs to. And look, trust me, I was like you. I would be sitting there saying, no, it couldn't be. But I would give the calc carb anyway. I wanted to test not only the remedy, what I was really trying to test was the validity of the system. So I would give the calc carb to this tall, dark, effervescent, glowing personality, and sure enough, whatever pathology they had, they would come back and it'd be fixed. And over the last 10 years, by case examples of exactly what I'm just talking about now, I began to understand that historically homeopaths have gone down the path of constructing drug pictures because, and you can understand why they need to do it. So I'm not having a shot at anyone in the past. You know, if you look at sulfur or pulsatilla or any of these polycrest remedies, there can be 15, 20,000 different rubrics. Now, of course, people just simply can't they can't remember these sort of things. So what we do to remember is that we come up with a caricature because our brain is designed to remember people more than numbers. And so as a result of that, in order to understand our remedies, we have personalized them. But I guess what I'm trying to get across, what was taught to me was the personalization of the remedies, while they are not wrong, they do not encompass the spectrum of what that remedy is capable of. And if you only give remedies like phosphorus to tall, bubbly, effervescent, dark people, then you are going to miss nearly 99.99% of the clients that come into your clinic needing phosphorus. So like I said, the caricature is not wrong, but it is so vastly incomplete. And that, I guess, is what the clinic has told me. Now, of course, we're in a situation where the idea of character in remedies and understanding the inner nature and character of remedies is stronger now than it ever has been. So what I'm saying must be just nails down a blackboard. But nonetheless, I can absolutely assure you, as I began to retrain myself out of it, my results improved.
Wow, that was a lot. It seems that sometimes the pendulum swings one way and then the other. And so if Hahnemann, and I also have a question, do you think Hahnemann was somehow using this FHA method that he was so able to be in tune with the vast amount of details for each polycrest, because that's really what he used so much. But it seems that in history, things do move from one end of the pendulum swing to the other. And if at one time in history you're so into the pathology and another time you're into the emotional personality or trying to simplify into a caricature or a stereotype, then maybe the pendulum swings again, and hopefully it will land in a moderate place where you take into consideration all of the factors and open up the scope.
Okay. Well, whether or not Hahnemann was intuitively using HFA, I would doubt, because he doesn't mention it at all. I think what's more likely is the crossovers that you can obviously see, and even though there are some tangents, we are essentially parallel. But rather than Hahnemann channeling HFA, I think it's just HFA trying to use Hahnemannian principles that clearly work. With reference to, and I've forgotten the second part of your question, but, oh no, I understand. In reference to the pathology and the pendulum swing, I was very much into, I guess, what I'll call contemporary homeopathy for a looser term. That is, it's very much based on the character and personality and outlook of the patient. And I was like this as well. I came through, like you talk about in the blurb before the program, that I was I'm into Ericksonian psychotherapy. I've done the hypnosis. So it wasn't a great leap for me to go into character profiling and drug pictures. There was a naturalness to that, and I enjoyed it, but over time, my expectations have really changed, and I guess I have gone back in to, again, I wish I had a dollar for every time I used his name, but I am going back into traditional Hahnemanian principles. Now, let's understand what Hahnemann was talking about when he said that how the remedies would affect personality. And he was talking about here that our remedies will influence any new or pathological character change. Now, he's not talking about here that a remedy is going to alter the basic nature and character of a patient who comes into our clinic. What it is going to do is that it is going to iron out those kind of defences and those exhibitions of character that the patient wouldn't normally have. If a patient walks into your clinic and they say, I'm smashing glasses and I'm getting really upset very quickly, but I used to be, up until 6 months ago, very placid, then I would expect that quick temper and that inability to control that quick temper under the remedy should come back into balance. However, if a person is dynamic and enthusiastic and is just full of energy, and they have always been like this, and I get a character profile of them, I don't expect that part to change, because it isn't aberrant behaviour. And this is where I think perhaps modern homeopathy is just going a little off skew in the fact that all personality should be taken into account rather than pathological emotional changes to the basic personality, because the two are very, very different. So, yes, I still take character disturbance into account, but I do not expect a patient's character to fit a remedy. I judge everything on the pathology that the patient presents with. After all, this is just homeopathy 101. That is that there is nothing to guide the physician about the internal disturbance of the body other than the presenting signs and symptoms. So I know through giving the remedy that I have brought this internal vital force back into balance, because all of the things like the smashing of the glasses and the quick temper and the headaches and the sleeplessness that patient is suffering from, they have been brought back into balance externally, so I know the internal harmony is also set back into balance. I think this modern idea that, and I'm not saying that people do it over in America, but I've seen too many people here in Australia, and what will happen is that they will give a seminar. One of the ones that I went to last was a seminar where a person comes in with constant headaches, a lot of period pain, and a lot of flooding. Now, it went from there into the character of that person, and then because that person was saying they came from another country, that they weren't feeling homesick anymore, and that they felt as if, life was a bit nicer, that was declared case fixed. Now, we never ever heard whether or not the headaches were still there, and we know, because the presenter said it, that the period pain and the flooding periods were still present. But what they're doing is that they were doing this Kentian sort of philosophy, where Kent says, look, providing that the person is stable and happy in themselves, the rest of it is just a matter of time. But I'm going to go against Kent here because my clinical experience says that that's not the case. Okay, this person was feeling happier in themselves even though they still had period pain and headaches and flooding, but I can assure you, as every one of us would understand, that they'd be even happier if those physicals left as well. And that's what I expect. What HFA is doing is that it has physical pathology as its baseline. That patient is not fixed until their physicals are brought back into balance.
Right. Well, as a homeopath, I would say whatever the patient comes in to the clinic for, we consider it the chief complaint. And if those physicals of period pain and headache or flooding or whatever that might be is what they came in for, that's what you need to address and not something else. So, I mean, the other thing will come along with it once you clear up those disturbances.
Well, that's true for probably 90% of the time. The only time that it's not true, and we can sometimes rearrange the hierarchy of importance using Herring's Law, but it's most of the time when a patient comes into the clinic, they are doing exactly what you just said, Debbie. They're coming in with a major complaint. That major complaint is the most serious complaint, and as a result of that, it is not job well done until that complaint is gone. But sometimes people will come into your clinic for, say, something more cosmetic, like eczema, you find out after the case taking that they're also have, you know, quite bad bronchitis or asthma or whatever. Now, I would then, doing a hierarchy of importance, I know that the patient has come in for their eczema, but personally for me, I'm going to be happier if their asthma is under control first before the eczema, even though that's what they came in for.
Well, thank you for adding that, because I would agree with that, because that's, again, isn't that Kantian, the more vital organs need to be addressed first, because if that person is throwing something out to the skin in the way of acne or whatever it is, the outer appearance is not as important as the correct functioning of the vital organs.
Well, that's true, and this is where I guess the whole idea of the constitution comes into account, and we need to live in a practical world, and I guess this is one of the major things that HFA has shown me, is that we need to, even though the speculative homeopathy and that homeopathy at this present time is very interesting and almost transcendental, we really do need to keep both feet on the ground and understand what it is that we're doing. And yes, it's true that the outer, if it's acne or whatever it may be, is far less important from, I guess, a pathology point of view than, say, a disturbance on a vital organ. But make no mistake, the reality is that socially, that disturbance on the skin is a really big deal to that patient. And this is why it's very important to look at things from a constitutional point of view and to try and get that skin complaint as quickly as what I would like to do the asthma. Because if that patient still, especially if they're worried about their appearance, the social aspect of it, the social stress caused by not looking good, if I don't fix that up reasonably quickly, they will go somewhere else. So, there's a whole lot of different balls that we've got to juggle, but a lot of it's common sense. But look, I guess was it Oscar Wilde that said the thing about common sense is that it's generally not that common. So that's just why I'm bringing it up. We have to take in, yes, there is the Herring's Law and there is the throwing out to the surface and the protection of the more vital organs, but at the same time we are very social beings, and things on the skin and cosmetic also need to be taken in and given the gravity that they deserve because of the social ramifications, the social stresses that that patient will experience.
Okay, so the last question for this evening, because our time is going to be up and we've almost gone 45 minutes, is the time lapse of how slow the healing process is or how quickly you can see these types of results, especially if you know the patient is going to walk away from the clinic if they don't see their skin clearing up so they can go out in public and be the social being that they like to be.
Look, the timing is always the how long is the piece of string, isn't it? And the timing of this, how quickly or otherwise a patient is going to respond to a remedy depends on so many different factors. The first one, and we don't have time to go into it, but the first thing to understand about our remedies is that we need to remember that our remedies are just energy. And the only reason that they work is because we are replacing energy into a body, the patient's body, that it just simply does not have of its own accord. So the more pathology that there is, the more energy depleted that patient is. And the energy depletion is an ongoing or continuous stress. This is Hahnemann's obstacles to cure. It's a continuing stress. And so when someone comes into our clinic, I can tell, again, common sense, if somebody is coming into our clinic and they are in a state of stress and as a result of that, because this may be for another day, but, you know, I see all chronic disease as just simply an imbalance of energy. You have two states. One is stress. One is exhaustion. I don't necessarily, even though I'm obviously a Hahnemann file, there are areas where I differ from Hahnemann too, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. And one of the areas is that I don't necessarily see chronic disease as a process of peeling off old disease layers, but I see it as a balance of energy within that patient. So as a person, if a person comes back and they are suffering insomnia or any other complaint and they are in a stressful environment, then they're going to take longer to fix. But generally, I bring my patients back now after 2 weeks, not 1 month. And as a result of that, if I don't see results in 2 weeks, I generally will change the remedy. That's what I expect. I expect to see something physical within that 2 week period.
I want to thank you so much for this very lightning speed tutorial of the HFA process. And I think that we're really getting to understand a little bit more about it. And each week you'll provide more questions and more answers for us, and you'll let us know where we go on the next session. I want to let folks know that we have a number of great shows on the Monday night HFA. On Wednesday, we have Heart Health with Dr. Otto. On Thursday, we've got Vaccinations and Your Rights, and also Dr. Shambro teaching us about pet health and homeopathy. And again, I want to just thank everybody for listening. Share it, tweet it, do everything that you can to bring in more listeners. Okay, and that's the end of our show for tonight. We're signing off. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.